SiriusXM Sports presents At the Races with Steve Bick. Enough! Horse racing, handicapping, interviews. This is At the Races with Steve Bick.
Very good Tuesday, race fans. Sirius 219 XM 201, Sports Zone 964. If you're listening to Sirius XM online and at our website as well, stevebick.com. Day two with the Preakness weekend recap. And got a fun already, a fun morning, I think, that should unfold. Including a brisk, going to be a brisk first hour because they're stacking up like planes over O'Hare. Jonathan Thomas will join us at about 9:15, and we'll talk about the return of Catholic Boy. And it looks like it's going to be just as fun in 2019 with Catholic Boy as it was for 2018, because the Dixie, very nice. Grade two on the grass looks like a prep for the Suburban over to the dirt. It's going to be fun. I'm anxious to hear from Jonathan what his full campaign concept is for Catholic Boy. And he came back, right? You know, that was a tough decision, actually, from a betting standpoint. And some people loved him. Some people, knew you had to respect him. I thought there were some inviting prices to use, and there were. And in fact, the prices ran okay, including I keyed off of Just Howard, who ran well. But that was a good performance and part of a great weekend for Javier Castellano. The track record story of Covfefe, it continues to intrigue. At least, I don't know, maybe I'm overly intrigued by it, but I can tell you that after the Brad Cox discussion yesterday, I wanted to kind of dig in and get more background information on the original record from 1990. And in a Northern Wolf, his name is a lot of fun to reach into the book for and pull up PPs, trained by Hank Allen, Dick Allen and Ron Allen's brother. And, of course, major league ball players, and Dick being, in a lot of ways, an absolute all-time great and certainly one of the fascinating personality and intellects in professional sports history. And his brother Hank was a very good trainer, and he came up during the week. It's funny that the Northern Wolf record ends up being a point of discussion, because the other day, who was on with me, was Marty, I think, when was it Marty, I think it was, when Dick Allen, I had sent Dick Allen a picture of Sparrowan, who was another very good allowance horse type that his brother trained, that I came across the picture, and he appreciated it. And then, here it was hours later, Hank is featured again because of Northern Wolf. Well, it turns out that record didn't mean anything in the book, sitting there, August, I want to say 18th, I think. August 18th, 1990, didn't mean much, as the date of that, that original 109 flat. But when I looked it up and I went to reach out for Northern Wolf, it became clear that, first it became clear it was in a stake, and then upon further examination, the fact that it was in the inaugural running of the Frank DeFrancis Memorial Dash. And not only did Northern Wolf set the track record, but he beat Safely Kept, who was 4-5. And also Glitterman was in there, and Sawickley. And also Sonny Blossom, who was okay. Sonny Blossom for Eddie Gregson. Mike Luzzi rode Northern Wolf that day. Luz is going to join us. Luz is going to take us back those 19 years. and he was the regular rider for the latter stages of Northern Wolf's career. He was a four-year-old at that point. I think he only started one or two more times after that. But I figured it had to take a quick time out to enjoy, you know, dialing back to that era. And what's amazing, actually, when you look at this, Mario Pino was in that race still riding, and Edgar Prado still riding. Carlos Marquez Jr., the late Chris Antley, Randy Romero, Walter Guerra. Glitterman was second in there at 19-1. This is a $1,500 triple with Safely Kept off the board. And what was fun about yesterday when I took some images from the Baltimore Sun, the Dale Austin recount of the race, and it was a big deal because it was, you know, it was real money, actually. I think $350,000 in 1990, and you know, the late Frank DeFrancis, and there was a lot to this. And I sent the link to Marty McGee, knowing that Marty was on hand. And within seconds, Marty writes back, selected as the top choice that day by me. And sure enough, I said, all right, let me go find, I'm going to go to the Saturday edition, because it was run on a Saturday. And sure enough, there it was, Marty McGee. Not only did Marty pick against Safely Kept, but he put Northern Wolf on top. Northern Wolf was his capital letter best bet of the day. Yeah, great job by Marty. And then, as if all of that wasn't enough, that Marty had picked Northern Wolf that day in his Baltimore Sun selections. But in addition, you got to listen to this comment that Marty wrote. It's hysterical, because Marty, in addition to picking the winner you know, a nice price, he also, I've got a little issue with my cursor, up and down. I got to bring the computer in my laptop for new buttons to go up and down, so I have to pull up the sidebar to move the screen. Here we go. Marty McGee's Pimlico picks from the August 18th, 1990 Baltimore Sun. Best pick, 8th, Northern Wolf. Don't blink during today's inaugural Frank J. DeFrancis Memorial Dash, or you may miss the whole thing. These are some real quickies, and the 6-furlong record could fall. Are you kidding me? Not only does Marty pick against one of the great, not just regional sprinters, but you know, one of the great sprinters of her era, Safely Kept. He makes Northern Wolf a best bet, and he predicts that a track record is going to be established, one that lasts 19 years. Safely Kept and Sonny Blossom figure to cut out most of the torrid pace, but Northern Wolf could be clinging closely from a clear outside position. There it is, the Marty McGee open air outside box where the air is fresh and clear. If the buoy-based colt fires his best shot, he's liable to pull the big upset, and that's exactly what happened. And Mike Luzzi will tell you about his trip on Northern Wolf that established a track record at a very popular distance, three quarters, 19 years it lasted, until this filly just, nobody can still figure out exactly what kind of a confluence of events. I mean, it had to be partly the surface with moisture, and it all just, it was a kismet kind of a moment. And let's face it, by lowering the track record by more than a second, and with the uncertainty of the future of that oval, that's a record that looks like it's going to stand for quite a while. So Mike Luzzi's going to visit. Roger Atfield, as I promised you yesterday, we're going to catch up with Atfield, which is always entertaining and frequently educational. He won the Louisville on Saturday with Tizza Slam and brought Steve Vaughn down. Nice for Steve to come down from Toronto and win a domestic stake. And a good point. Harry Rice just texted me. I'm saying 19 years, and as if it was 2000. It was 1990. Yeah, 29 years. Excuse me, 29 years. And you know, Harry brings up a good point. Luzzi, Prado, Pino, all still riding 29 years later. Thank you, Harry. In addition to Tizza Slam, of course, Atfield has got this Icky Masho. And okay, yeah, the field scratched down, and she had that group in the searching over a barrel. But still, that's her, I think, third straight. And Icky Masho looks like she's going to have a big year. Andy Serling, top of hour two, as the scene shifts from Louisville to Baltimore to New York. And there'll be a big buildup here these 3 weeks into Belmont Stakes Day and Belmont Racing Festival, really, Thursday, Friday, Saturday. Heard from Pat McKenna today, and he said, we got to talk about Belmont Week. I said, you mean Met Mile Week? I'm going to start calling it the Met Mile Week, because not that the Belmont won't be great. It'll be fun. But that Met Mile has got people really excited. John White in hour three, Jeremy Plonk as well. And haven't got a confirmation yet, but there's a good chance we'll talk to Gary Barber today from France at the Cannes Film Festival. And, of course, Gary providing another classic, this time American classic, for Mark Cassie. Before we got about 2 minutes, we'll bring, and yeah, no break, Deja, so we're going to stay right here and bring Jonathan Thomas on in about 2 minutes. And as we do that, and as I mentioned Cassie, how about Cassie visits yesterday? We have that fun discussion about the Preakness win. And then, you know, I had to ask him about the horses that were running in stakes yesterday. Well, first, Super Tappet wins just under 2-1 and just gets up. It was a pretty exciting finish. Just gets up past Mr. Ritz, one of the two Josie Carrolls. And Roger Atfield actually had Are You Kidding Me, the remarkable 9-year-old. He was a good third, actually, in this. And Super Tappet, that's a nice win for Mrs. Weber. And we'll see what it means going forward, you know, coming out of it. And then later, about an hour and a half later, at Erie, Explorationist parlays the maiden breaker at Woodbine just 3 weeks ago. That big breakthrough win as a debuting three-year-old turns right around, wins a stake in his second start of the year. So some of the expectation for Explorationist, who was a, you know, expensive purchase, coming to pass. And he provides the Cassie Barn 5 stake wins I think I said 72 hours on Twitter. It actually was more like 48 hours. five stake wins. Unbelievable. Two at Woodbine, Preakness, the third one at Woodbine yesterday in the Eclipse, the grade two, and then the Tom Ridge. Unbelievable. There was also that Spring Oaks, nice little $75,000 filly race at Parks yesterday that I didn't mention to you. Avelina, easy winner. Kendra Carmouche comes back to Philly for Danny Gargan and John O'Hara. And the Tale of Akati filly romps. So there you go. Speaking of romping, Catholic Boy, easier than even expected win in the Dixie on Saturday leading into the Preakness, and was outposted, thought that might be a little bit of a hindrance, off the layoff. It proved that really nothing stood in his way. Jonathan Thomas joins us. Jonathan, congratulations.
Thank you, Steve. Good morning.
Good morning. And, you know, this was one of those tough equations for handicappers and players, because you looked at Catholic Boy and you thought, well, he's going to have to negotiate a trip, and, you know, not that Castellano can't do it, but, you know, he's off the layoff, haven't seen him since Breeders' Cup weekend and all that, and you think, well, maybe we go against them at a short price, but I thought he won with something in reserve.
No, I'd agree. I mean, you know, we were looking for a nice comeback spot for him, and, you know, I know the Breeders' Cup didn't work out, but it was a complete toss-out for us. I mean, the horse came out of it well and, you know, did great over the winter with time off, and, you know, for whatever reason, and I guess it's a credit to his athleticism, he didn't really let himself down so much that, you know, he didn't retain quite a bit of fitness coming into this race. So, you know, look, we're always questioning horses coming off the layoff, but we were, you know, very fortunate that you know, it all worked out well, and he broke sharp, and Javier gave him a great trip, and, you know, he was able to navigate everything nicely, and I think he'll improve quite a bit for the effort, you know. So you know, it went as well or better than I could have expected.
Talk about what you do between, you know, between the Breeders' Cup and you know, was he turned out? Is he out there running around a little bit in the paddock?
Pretty much. Bridlewood? Yeah, I mean, you know, a normal protocol with a horse like this, you know, especially before you give him turnout time, would be to do a complete workup with the vet. And in our case, that's at a Cali Equine, and Dr. Cantrell and Dr. Madison. They've been with this horse throughout his career. And, you know, he went over him with a fine tooth comb, and we were very fortunate where he literally had nothing wrong with him. So, you know, the ownership group, another credit to them, you know, to give a sound, healthy horse 90 days off, you know, with some big races that he could have participated in the winter. You know, they did right by him, and he literally, you know, you get turned out all day and come up at night and get groomed. And, you know, we try to allow him to be a horse as much as possible and just let Mother Nature kind of help us out. And in this case, it just really did. So, you know, it's just a huge team effort, and a credit to everybody's, you know, horsemanship skills and, you know, and doing the right thing by their horse. And it's great to see everybody get paid back for that.
There were published workouts that started in mid-March, late March at Bridlewood. And how much of that is work that you are present for and supervising, and, you know, then, you know, the moving him on to the racetrack? I mean, talk about that process and how you balance it.
I'm not gonna lie, Steve, this is a horse that I am reluctant to get out of eyesight of, you know, and it's for a multitude of reasons. I mean, you know, this horse literally was turned out a couple hundred yards from my house. You know, he's a horse I could kind of look out of a particular window and see, you know, and, you know, I've been present for 99.9% of his breezes. And, you know, the other thing is, like, this year, you know, could be his last year as a racehorse. And, you know, I'd like to hope that I could get another one like him, but I don't know that if that's going to happen. So I'm also trying to soak up the, you know, the luxury that comes along with training a horse like this, because it's a rare thing. So for me, you know, I'm never too far from this horse.
And I know we discussed this last year as you were moving back and forth, you know, fairly interchangeably between the main track and the grass. But also talk about the, you know, the movement in a training capacity, because he had the bullet a minute and two April 29th at Belmont. And then you put him out there on the grass course for the final preparation pre-race. And how are those determinations made?
Weather played a little bit strongly into that.
Okay.
And kind of, you know, also from a training perspective, you know, I feel like the dirt is a little bit more demanding, and coming off a layoff, I wanted to get a nice stout breeze into him, you know, 3 weeks out, which, you know, happened on the dirt, and you know, you could bullet in a minute and two, I believe, and galloped out in 13 and change. It was a very, very good work. And then the weather came in, and, you know, we missed his second to last breeze, and that had me a little concerned, you know, that we had missed that, but he seemed happy and bright and moving well, so we didn't too crazy about it. And then, you know, it was always planned to have his last two breezes on the turf just to get him reacquainted with it. And, you know, came back and subsequently had a very good turf work, which isn't out of line for him. That's normally the case. And, you know, just to kind of, he hasn't been on the grass since the Belmont Derby, you know. So, you know, it's close to almost a year since he's been on the turf in any capacity. So we wanted to allow him to go ahead and get a chance to stretch his legs before we ran him on it.
Well, of course, he's out on the turf, out, you know, in the paddocks when he's running around.
It is
a turnout.
You know, yeah, not quite the same.
No,
you know, he's a horse that, you know, he takes two steps out in his paddock and drops his head and eats, and, you know, he kind of takes advantage of everything we've put in front of him, including that. You know, he always did that well too. So
when we hear trainers say, particularly off comebacks, you know, that he's about 80%, he's 90%, you know, he's all the way 100%. For you, what does that entail? And if you had to put a number on having him, over a preparation range for a campaign, what would you say? You know, in that regard, he was going into this.
My guess is he was probably around 80 to 85%, somewhere in that capacity. You know, he has fired very well off of layoffs, and you know, so that wasn't a complete surprise. But, you know, with 6.5 months, you wouldn't expect that kind of effort. And, you know, I haven't gotten all the numbers back, but the numbers that have come back have been very, very good. So, you know, he is able to improve off of what he did in the Dixie, then, you know, that puts him in some pretty heady company for the rest of the year. And that was always the hope, you know, going into this year, that he'd be in an older horse that, you know, we could do well with. So, you know, that was a great launch pad. And, you know, if he's able to improve physically for the effort, I mean, I think that puts us in some good scenarios.
Explain what you use as that determinant. You know, we frequently will watch as a horse gets campaigned, and you can see they might come in with a little bit of, not a belly, but the, you know, a little bit of extra weight. And of course, a 3-year-old to a 4-year-old, and a 4-year-old to a 5-year-old, they're changing physically. They're you know, frequently, all you have to do, frankly, is look at a horse like Uncle Mo from his racing days to, you know, the early stages of his stud career to see, you know, get an impression of what he would have looked like as an older horse, and he, like a different horse, really. And I always think of him because he, you know, he went from sort of a lean, lighter frame to a big, bruising horse with full maturity. What do you see when you look at a horse that's, you know, getting ready for the season, and, you know, tucking up a little bit and you know, trimming that weight off, that kind of thing? You know, how do you know?
I'd say it's more of a feel kind of thing, and certainly it's you know, individualized. I mean, different horses kind of handle the breaks differently. Some put on too much weight and it's hard to get off, and some don't put on the weight that you'd hope. But in this case, he put on what I would call great weight, in the sense that it was a lot of good muscle coverage, and, you know, he just looks stronger and more mature. You know, I don't know the breakdown, but I know every time a horse runs, I think it's somewhere in the realm of 15 to 20% of their muscle mass evaporates, you know, so you're putting that back on or attempting to put that back on. So, you know, he's a horse that I felt was going in you know, I was very happy with how he looked and then how he came out of it. He didn't seem to put on too much, lose too much weight, but you want some reserves for some of these wars or battles you're going to go into down the road. And, you know, this time of year, you'd hate to have a horse underweight and then play catch up, you know, going into some of these bigger races. So while he's never been a horse that would get fat, so to speak, you know, he was carrying what I would call like good flesh. And now he's looking like he's quite fit. So it's just kind of monitoring that. And then, like Uncle Mo, you're saying, I mean, he turned into just a magnificent-looking animal. And, you know, I understand the commercial aspect. You know, these horses get rushed off to stud. But really, these horses are, they're like teenagers at three, you know. And at four, you're seeing them as kind of young adults. And, you know, unfortunately, we don't get to see those horses too often that you know, get to race that long. And, you know, they just get better looking, you know, a lot of them, especially the upper tier horses. So, you know, we've seen quite a bit of that in this horse the last couple months.
Well, it's going to be fun to have him back. And based on some of the things that we heard post Dixie, he's going to have an adventurous campaign again, moving turf to dirt to turf. Talk about, you know, some of the things that you and Bob LaPenta and the team are considering.
Well, the Suburban, you know, 6 weeks away seems like a nice logical dirt start. It's a mile and a quarter, which plays to his strengths. It's at Belmont. We're a place where he's, you know, he's not run on the dirt there, but he's always trained and you know, perform well there. So, you know, that kind of makes sense. And then, you know, we're always race to race. I'm a little reluctant to map out a long campaign. We let each race tell us where our next step should be. But the Suburban seems like a very logical, you know, next stop for us. And, you know, so I think that's what we're going to train towards. And, you know, if something else pops up on the horizon that makes more sense, we'll certainly deviate. But right now, that would be where we're headed.
And then as the calendar unfolds and as we get into the summer, you'll just take it based on timing and, you know, what's the long-term seasonal goal?
You've got those wonderful races, historic races at Saratoga, you know, between the Whitney and the Woodward, and certainly, you know, that would further add to his resume. You know, especially as stallion career, you know, imminently is on the horizon down the road. So, I mean, one of those two spots would be something that we would definitely take a look at. And, you know, listen, he's done very well up at Saratoga. And, you know, he's the greatest stake winner there at two and three. And if for some reason we're able to do that for him as a four-year-old, that would be an incredible thing. And, you know, so that's something we're looking at just to kind of add to his legacy, so to speak. And, you know, if the Arlington Million was just a little bit differently, you know, positioned on the calendar, I mean, you know, if there's that's something that I would love to think that he could perform in also. But obviously the timing of those races, they kind of all fall on top of each other. So we'd have to pick one over the other. But something at Saratoga for sure. I mean, that's just, it's been such a good place for him. We'd love to knock something out up there.
Absolutely. Well, plenty to look forward to, and it's just great to get him back. And he comes back running. Javier Castellano caps a big weekend with the fifth stake win.
He had an incredible weekend.
Oh, my
yeah,
God.
I mean, he put on an absolute riding clinic. I mean, yeah, I think we're very lucky to see a guy. I might be wrong in this, but I think we're probably the only sport where Hall of Famers are actively competing, you know, to see a guy like him perform. And he's been a huge part of, you know, the successes we've had. I mean, I can't really say enough about him as a rider and a person. He's been completely instrumental in, you know, the success we've had with this horse and a couple of others. So,
well, and I'm sure that'll continue. And of course, John Panaget, part of that.
Well, John, you know, he's the Wizard of Oz behind all this. You know, you don't see him, but he's, you know, a huge part of the campaigning of this horse and a lot of decision making. And, you know, it's been a huge team effort, but he's been, you know, huge part of this. And, you know, it's also been a lot of fun for that reason, too.
Let me ask you about one horse that's coming up later in the week. And on Thursday, you come back and a mile and three-eighths. This is one of those fun scenarios for three-year-olds. And to a friend, this is a George Strawbridge homebred, the white and green of Augustine, a Scat Daddy filly out of the Lemon Drop Kid mare. And so you can maybe sense the distance. Debuted at Gulfstream late in the meet and actually ran well going a mile and a 16th, and you wanted to add even more distance. Manny Franco gets aboard. You're 7-2 on Thursday in the 7th.
She's a really interesting filly. You know, we took her time with her. You know, being a Scat Daddy early on, I thought, you know, she'd be kind of adept at a mile to a mile and an eighth, and it looked like how she ran the other day. She was kind of coming on late, and the number came back pretty well. I believe it was like a 76 buyer, you know, which I thought was quite good for a three-year-old filly, you know, going routing on the turf. And the filly that won the race for Todd, the Tappet filly, we actually broke her at Bridlewood, and she always showed quite a bit of ability. So, you know, we felt like we were coming out of a race with pretty good company. So, the mile and three-eighths, we'll see if that plays to this filly's strengths. She's lightly raced. It's her second start, so we're not going to try to overthink ourselves, but I think it's going to give her plenty of opportunity to get into a good rhythm, and you know, hopefully the trip suits her. So,
yeah, this is a serious bunch, actually.
It's a good bunch. I mean, it's a New York maiden, so you can't take anything for granted. You know, in these races at Belmont, especially the maidens and the allowances, they really let you know what you have on your hands. You know, so We'll learn a little bit more about her for sure, but there's some, you know, salty company and some pretty salty pedigrees in there, you know.
Well, and in fact, a couple that we've discussed even fairly recently, Shug has got Inspector Havers, the criminologist filly by Tisnow, he's bringing that one back on fairly short rest, 2 weeks. And how about the Wood Lane Farm homebred, the sister of Sadler's Joy, Dinah Passer,
second,
right here.
Yeah, she actually finished second in our maiden race at Gulfstream, and she's been very consistent, you know, so going a mile and three, you know, that filly could be quite dangerous also.
Well, and you also have got the Galileo filly of Craig Burnick and Proctor's returning in this spot, Decorating, who's overdue, has been basically running the exact same race over and over, and at some point, the roulette peg should fall in her slot. Fun race, 7th on Thursday at Belmont. Jonathan Thomas comes back with Catholic Boy, who's got a lot of fans, the dirt and turf exploits. Jonathan, well done, and we'll see you in a couple of weeks down at Belmont leading into the big festival.
Much appreciated, Steve. Thank you.
Not at all. Jonathan Thomas, everybody, who really does some job between the work at Bridlewood and the clients that have come his way, and really always enjoy visiting. We always enjoy an opportunity to talk to Mike Luzzi. The Luzz joins us. Good morning.
Hey, Steve, how are you?
Mike, terrific. And, you know, I think that, you know, you've been in New York so long that everybody forgets that in the early days of your career came in the Mid-Atlantic, Delaware and Jersey and Pennsylvania and Maryland. And this almost 30-year-old record that fell on Friday, Northern Wolf, who you rode the second half of his career for Hank Allen. And I thought it was irresistible to not have you come back here and talk about that day in the DeFrancis Dash.
Well, that was a long time ago, but it's sure a good memory of mine.
When did you get on board for with Hank? Because
I had ridden other horses for Hank, and for some reason I think I was an apprentice still when Northern Wolf ran in the Derby, and a jock named JoJo Ladner was riding that horse. I didn't ride him until he was four, and they decided to sprint him, of course. And he became a really, really good sprinter.
I'm just looking now. I've got it. April of 90, you get on board. You're second in a conditional allowance. And then didn't run great going long again. More starts going long. And then the last five starts of his career, all sprinting, and he started to really find the range.
He had the track record at Law as well, and I think, I'm not sure if it still stands, but he ran 8-1 at Law, and then I think it was 9-flat at Pimlico, but people sometimes forget at Pimlico there's no room for the starting gate, so when the gate opens, they're basically right on the pole, which starts the timer, so 109 doesn't sound that significant or that fast, but it's, you're almost starting at a standstill, which some people tend to forget.
That's interesting, and I'm glad you tie that in. The fact that this record stood for 29 years is astounding. I mean, for that filly to lower, for Covfefe to lower it over a second. I mean, nobody could believe it, Mike. I mean, everybody was looking at each other like, what did we just see?
Yeah, that's the modern era, whether the track is souped up or maybe they made some room for the starting gate and she got a running start. But, track records are meant to be broken. And hopefully that one will stand for a long time as well. But that's what they're made for, records to break.
This race in the DeFrancis Dash, and this was the first running of the DeFrancis, and
absolutely,
you had Safely Kept in here at 4-5. I mean, what did Hank tell you, and what was the, you know, what were you guys thinking going in?
It was a perfect scenario. We had outside post, and I was able to stalk Sibwickley and Glitterman. There were some good horses in that race, and this horse was just on his top of his game. I mean, later in my career, I rode a horse for Scott Lake, Shake You Down, was kind of like the same kind of horse, a stalking sprinter. So whenever you got a perfect scenario, he didn't have to be in front. He could stalk, and an outside post is always perfect for a horse like that. And that was a perfect storm that day.
Well, and you basically let the pace, you know, come to you. Sunny Blossom pressing, and the interesting part was that in a lot of ways Safely Kept it just really never even involved in this.
Yeah, I mean, she was, you know, she was running against the boys, and she loved Pimlico. I used to run against her in the Maryland Million all the time on another course, another filly sprinter I rode called In the Curl, and I can never beat Safely Kept. I think she was up against it that day, even though they made her favorite. She was probably kind of a false favorite, you know, was a filly, a mare against the boys, and she did not show up that day. And I think she won her next start after that, after the DeFrancis Dash.
I'll take a peek, but I'm just so intrigued by everything that went into this, and not the least of which this for an introductory inaugural race, and of course, you know, the DeFrancis family, a big part of this, and Joe and Karen, and I'm sure, you know, everybody else. It was very special, you know, to establish the race. But 350,000, I would think, Mike, that had to be the biggest purse that you would want up to that point.
Up to that point, it was, and you know, Mr. DeFrancis, Frank, had just passed not soon before that. And they made that race. And at that time in Maryland racing was really, really, really good. I mean, the everyday purses were excellent as well. And that was due to Frank DeFrancis getting that done. And I want to say Maryland racing peaked right around that same time. You know, not that it declined because he passed away, but it was certainly at a peak.
Well, I got to ask you too, because you know, the Allen brothers, of course, Dick and Hank and Ron, among the greatest brother combinations in baseball history. What was it like to ride for Hank give us a feel for, you know, when, you know, does brother get a chance to come around much, and Hank, you know, Hank, a tremendous ball player in his own right.
Well, Dick Allen, as we all know, was a great home run hitter, and he came around a lot. He was actually he was there more than Hank, I think, at the races. I think him and Pete Rose were buddies, to be honest with you. But They were one thing about those guys, they all were became professional baseball players. And Hank, of course, fell in love with the horse. But Ronnie was actually a groom for Hank. But those, they were the biggest men players that you'd ever see. I mean, you knew right away that they were professional athletes just by their size. And this was, you know, this was back in the day when, you know, not all baseball players were big as they are now. And like I said, Dick Allen was always at the races. He actually became an agent for a little while for Johnny Vasquez.
He was Johnny's first agent.
Yeah, that's a true fact.
Too funny. Well, I had to get you on for this, and you know, remind everybody, Luz, that portion of your career. Now you grew where in Delaware?
I grew up in Delaware, which was, you know, it's not too far. You know, Delaware is not a big state; it only takes a half hour to get through it. And so Delaware Park is where I started basically riding, you know, galloping horses, not riding races, but I did start riding in Maryland. A trainer, Eddie Gaudette, and a guy named Joe Berto had my book, and those were good times. I won a lot of races, and some very good races, and brings back memories today. Thank you.
Not at all, and I want to send you a picture. It's funny because one of the horses you rode, about this era, a little bit later on, I came across a picture, a Timely Warning, the really nice Maryland bred. And Dickie, right? Dickie Small?
No, my grandfather trained that horse, Buddy Rain.
Okay. All right. I thought it's funny. I found a picture that was identified as Timely Warning. And all right.
Yeah, he won. I won my first grade one in New York on that horse for my grandfather. I won the Brooklyn Handicap at Aqueduct. I beat Chief Honcho. Very nice Maryland bred. He won the Maryland Million a couple times, and that was top up.
Well, that's great, and I'll send you that picture. I mean, I'm sure you got your own pictures of him, but I came across it.
I might have to dig it up somewhere, but I probably have that picture.
I love it, and I think this one was in the Maryland was either a Maryland Budweiser Cup, one of those kinds of things, or it might have been
a Maryland Million.
Or a Maryland Million, exactly. And by the way, I just got the night, and I'm glad that I'm hearing from him. Our friend Avi Friedberg wanted me to get some information because he wants to send you pictures from the Westchester win and talk about that with Nicodemus a couple of weeks ago.
Yeah, I mean, that was Derby Day, and Ben DeRice gave me a nice opportunity and got a perfect scenario, a perfect trip on a pretty nice horse. And it's always nice to win a graded stake. If people recognize it right away, and you know, I've been riding so long, they think I remembered how to ride for one day and stuff like that. But it was fun, and it was well appreciated by Linda Rice.
Well, and this is a horse, you know, they were very patient getting him back, and you know, this was a big purchase for, you know, for the partners, the Goichmans and the Friedbergs, and Linda rewards them with that win. And you know, and for you, what a nice win that is, to pick off the Westchester. And physically, you know, you're 100%, right? I mean, you came back from an injury that we talked about it at the time, that, you know, the pelvis break, and a lot of people assumed you'd never ride again.
Yeah, I mean, that was, you know, I always knew I'd ride again, and it was a pretty bad injury, but I took my time with it and had the right doctors and healed up. I feel fine. Actually, I'm riding in the car with a longtime New York trainer, Gary Gullo. We're going to play golf today, so I can swing the car. I can do everything still, so. And ride, especially.
I love it. Well, tell Gullo, you know, Gullo should buy you lunch, and I'm sure he's got to give you a few strokes because he's a major.
I don't know. He used to beat me all the time, but he's been on the shelf a little bit. But you got to watch them fresh horses. They always show up. Them fresh horses.
I love it. I love it. Mike, I really appreciate this. I thought people would enjoy hearing the backstory from 29 years ago, the longstanding record, Northern Wolf, and I'm delighted.
Steve, I got one more fact about Northern Wolf.
Yeah.
You know, a few of those articles said he wasn't going to run in the Breeders' Cup at Belmont, and they actually decided they were going to, and he did train. I was going to ride him. He did train at Belmont, and he breezed. And friend of mine, but a frustrated jockey that got too big to ride, was working him that day, and he worked 56 flat at Belmont main track, you know, before that Breeders' Cup, and he didn't come out of the work too good, and he didn't get the run. He actually retired after that, but he did work in 56 flat at Belmont.
Unbelievable. And
he was a fast horse, but it, you know, it wasn't in hand. The jock was letting him roll pretty good, and unfortunately he didn't come out of the work too good, so they retired him. And I think he went to stud somewhere in maybe South Africa or something like that.
Yeah, you see, every so often, you see Northern Wolf in pedigrees, absolutely. And of course, a son of Wolf Power. But, you know, you mentioned that 1990 sprint, and of course, ended up being an unfortunate circumstance between the cardiac incident by Mr. Nickerson and Shaker Nick falling over.
That was that race. That's right.
Yeah. A pretty fateful day in general at Belmont that day, because of course later Gopher won. About as tough a day at a racetrack.
Well, yeah.
Luz, I appreciate this, and keep it in the fairway, and go beat Gullo good. He needs a good beating.
Yeah, he does. He's laughing. You got him laughing.
I love it. Mike Luzzi with Gary Gullo behind the wheel. I love it. We'll talk to see, and we'll see Mike down at Belmont, of course, Belmont Week, when we're in for the festival. We're going to stay right here and bring in Roger Atfield, and it's been too long since we last talked to Roger, but he's going great. Tis a Slam wins the Louisville at Churchill on Saturday, and in front of us at Pimlico, Icky Masho, who, you know, was going to have those, you know, those horses to push around. Roger, congratulations.
Well, thank you. Right place, right time, I guess.
Well, this Icky Masho feels like she could be beating anybody right now. She's really dialed in.
Yeah, she's really high on herself, and she's very, very happy filly. Yeah, she said she's doing really, really well.
Talk about her, you know, her development, and you know, what has gotten her to this point.
I'm sorry.
What has gotten her so good, and talk about how she's developed.
Yeah, I mean, she just last fall and winter, she just changed totally. I mean, she just looks so well in herself, and she's really happy, and all she's been enjoying her work immensely, and just like a totally different person, you know. So I thought maybe there's a chance as you get older, you get better. I don't know.
You know, you've taught me a lot, and I. For years, ever since you told us that time, it was probably a September, maybe it was an E.P. Taylor or something that we had talked about. You had a winter, and you explained about summers and then the cooler weather in the fall, and how, you know, particularly for mares, that you can see changes. This is a 7 year old, and it's amazing. You've had her for what, about almost 2 years now?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
What kept her? What basically kept her in training, for starters, coming from the UK?
Well, she's, she just developed very well for us, and we kept her very happy, and she became very sound, and she goes on a tread plate every day, which she really seems to enjoy, and I think it's very beneficial for her. But, you know, you talk about fillies and cold weather and warm weather and this, that, and the other. I mean, she went down to Florida from being in the cooler weather up here and thrived, you know. Now, I know we put her on Lasix, and she changed quite a bit from... I really felt that she'd changed anyway, but we put her on Lasix. She had never really had any significant bleed at all ever in her life. So I can't see that that really could have changed anything particularly either. But at that time, you know, she was doing exceptionally well, and it does seem like that that might have been the cause of her getting better, but I'm not quite sure that that's true.
It's also, I mean, I don't have her full PPs beyond her start in September in Chelmsford of September of 17, but it also feels like the grass is better for her than the synthetic.
Yeah, I think so too. I mean, she handles the synthetic, but she definitely is better on the turf for sure. And you know, we purchased her, or she was purchased just to be a handy horse, you know, in Canada. And you know, she was a hard knocking filly, but not, you know, had never run in anything major over there. And you know, she just seemed like a real workmanlike filly that was going to be able to win some races for us, you know. But you know, she's done a lot better than that for sure.
You know, she came into, you know, her 7-year-old year as a multiple graded stake placed mare, and mm-hmm. you know, now she's got the Bewitch at Keeneland to her credit, the grade 3. She placed in both the Orchid and in the Very One. This was the Very One that they run at Gulfstream, and mm-hmm. then comes back in this nice $100,000 race, you know, where she was, you know, she was 1-2. You knew she was going to gallop around. But mm-hmm. what are you going to do with her going forward this summer?
Well, I should probably run in the Darn Smartly up here next month. You know, we have a number of races going along on the turf that you know, we'll do that. And if we have to ship, we will ship too, you know. So she's, as long as she stays healthy and well, she's, you know, she's got lots of places she can run, you know.
She also, Roger, she feels very tractable. It feels like, and Ortiz is getting along with her really well. I mean, distance-wise, it looks like you could really do a lot of different things with her.
Yeah, she is. She is very versatile, and she's become very rateable now, too, and which has really helped in those mile-and-a-half races. But, she, you know, she's got some speed to her, too, actually. So, yeah, she's a very interesting mare, actually.
7 years old, and right now has basically forced herself on the older filly and mare turf division. At the same time, let's talk about the 5-year-old horse, Tis a Slam, and what a nice wire-to-wire win for him in the Louisville on Saturday.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, he's you know, he was a really, really big 2-year-old, and when I first got him as a 2-year-old. The beginning of his 2-year-old year, you know, I'd looked at him, and you know, I'd sort of said, well, you know, I won't be running him as a 2-year-old, and I finished up running 4 times and winning 3 of them. So is what I know. But in those days, he was really, really an awkward horse. He was big and still growing and very uncoordinated. He couldn't play and jump around like most young horses because he just wasn't coordinated enough. So consequently, with the size of him and the length of stride that he has, he couldn't run in races where he had got covered up or had to check at any time. You could never get him going again. He had to get that big stride just rolling, you know. And he's a big galloping horse. And, you know, he's got to the age now where he's fully matured so consequently, you know, we kept him sound and well and looked after him nicely, and now he's he's rewarding us, I think, you know.
Well, that's like you. You've come to an age where you're fully matured.
Yeah, but not that sound.
Not a sound. I love it. Well, and that's great. This is Chiefswood, and you're doing great work for Chiefswood. And in fact, Roger, I got to tell you that yesterday I had on, of course, Cassie joined us. Mark did, and we talked about the big Preakness win, and you came up because you guys ran against each other in the Eclipse yesterday, and Mark, you know, gushed about you and. You know, as everybody who races against you, the respect that you command.
Well, that's very kind of him. Yeah, we've known each other for a long time, and he's really striding on now, isn't he? I mean, he just had a great weekend again too, so it was wonderful. I was so pleased.
I got to ask you about yesterday too, the third place finish, and what kind of. Combine Are You Kidding Me and Tis a Slam and what you're thinking about, you know, but here's another advanced age. What, he's a 9 year old and he's still competitive.
Yeah, he's been a lovely horse for us, and he he was we gave him quite a bit of time off this winter, and he gets plagued with a quarter crack that's it's always a constant niggle to us, and so, you know, and he's probably just a bit rusty coming into that race. We ran him at Keeneland. Basically, you know, as a race to sort of put him maybe onto this Eclipse race. But I still think he needs another race before he gets back to his old form. And maybe he's got to a point where he's just missed a step or two anyway. But, you know, he's still happy, healthy, sound, and he'll have another nice season, and this will be his last season for sure. But, he's just a nice horse to have around for sure.
Well, and Are You Kidding Me? And he is a whole horse, $1.2 million in earnings, two-time Sovereign Award winner, son of Runaway and Hyde. And we'll see if there's – you would think that somewhere internationally you would think that he'd be attractive as a stallion.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. I've talked to the owner a little bit about it, and he's a horse that definitely would be able to stand here in Canada as, you know, an Ontario-sized horse. I think he'd be do very well, to be honest with you. Yeah.
Back to Tis a Slam for a second. What do you think? What's on the agenda for him? And I also got to mention Steve Bahn, winning, nice chance for him to come to the U.S. and get an American graded stake win.
Yeah, it really was. He's a very accomplished horseman. He's been around a long time, and he's a very, very capable hand on a horse for sure. And he doesn't travel very much or anything like that. And it was so good to see him be able to go down there and ride that horse, because he knows him very well also. And he's got a program up here. I can't think of the name of the next race up here, but it's 1.375, and then there's 1.5 miles, and then there's a whole program for him up here. But we'll also travel him, I think, this summer also, you know, depending on, you know, how well he's doing. But at this point of time, we're quite excited about him.
The Nijinsky and the Sky Classic, and much like last year, some of the same...
There's the same programming, and the Northern Dancer, and then the International at the end of the thing, if you're good enough. But there are many races, too, on the East Coast that can be used also. So, it would be okay there.
Well, Roger... clicking along beautifully, and a big Saturday with Icky Masho and Tis a Slam and so many more. What? Give us a quick update on your three-year-olds, because I'm sure you've got a couple for Queen's Plate that you're angling toward.
No, I don't, actually.
No?
The last couple of years I've been very, very light on two-year-olds, and consequently you get to three-year-old years and you don't have anything really. But I don't really have anything super exciting in the three-year-old division at all, actually, at this moment. So, but we've got a couple that haven't started yet, so they might be okay.
Well, I'm gonna push for people to get you some two-year-olds for this year, so you can win another Queen's Plate.
There you go. We've got to get that down. Sure.
I love it, Roger. It's always a treat. Well done.
Well, thank you. I enjoyed it, and stay well. Everybody, stay well.
Roger Atfield, folks, an absolute Hall of Fame legend on both sides of the border. And a terrific weekend, a terrific Saturday, the Sicky Mash Show. And how about keeping horses age 7? We talked about a 9-year-old, a 7-year-old, and a 5-year-old. 9-year-old, 7-year-old, and a 4-year-old and a 5-year-old. No, 2 5-year-olds. 2 5-year-olds, a 7 and a 9. Yeah. Somebody get Roger a couple of Ontario bred 2-year-olds for this year so that he can win another Queen's Plate. Top of the hour upon us. That was I told you we had an action-packed first hour for you. I think we'll slow it down a little. Andy Serling going to join us next. John White later. Jeremy Plonk. And more. This is usually our lead end, right? This is, yeah. I usually play this after the first 15 minutes. We'll be back after this. Andy joins us.